everybody. I'm Gosia from Cosmic Agency. I'm doing this amazing video now because I know it's going to be incredible with Dale Harder again. I already did one interview with Dale. Dale, hello. How are you?
Hi, how are you? It's so good to be with you again.
Thank you so much. And actually, the reason why I'm doing this again, this interview with Dale again, is very special. It's a special reason. It's not just to talk and just to talk about, you know, our views and spiritual ideas, that too. But there is a bigger and more profound and more special reason why we will be talking about this. And actually, I want you, Dale, to take it and actually explain yourself. What has happened recently? Why are we here together? Okay, and then I'm gonna go with my questions. So go ahead, Dale.
Okay, you mean besides besides my life being turned upside down?
yes, and why?
Since the last time we have spoken. Largely through your efforts, starting on May 26th, a couple months ago, 2.5 months ago, I was fortunate enough to actually meet my people, the Palladians, through you and their efforts. And as I understand it, they had a Federation Council meeting over me and decided and deliberated to allow me to come into the group. And with that, my Tegetan Palladian person being was confirmed. And so I got to meet them for the first time, and it was beyond words.
Let's pause for a second, yes, because there are here so many things. So first of all, yes, Dale has had the opportunity to speak with Zvaru and Aneka and...
The whole team. Yeah.
Yes, I introduced Dale to them. It was a special moment, and as you will see from the first video we made, Dale has always perceived himself, has always known himself to come from Tayeta, and right. As he just now said, but in a nonchalant way, but it's important. It was confirmed by Zvaru and by the Tegetan team that he indeed. Has Tegetan roots. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit more. How did that
absolutely.
Happen?
The first meeting was beyond comprehension, and it makes me very emotional. There are many times when I shed tears over this, and of course the first meeting with about six or seven of the people. And I tell everyone, I says, you know, it's like a room full of doctors, and it's hello, doctor, doctor, hello, doctor, doctor. You know, and 20 minutes later, we're still saying hello.
So it's
very formal interactions, but then, you know, as things lighten up, and then everybody gets to know one another, and we relax along the way. So the last 2.5 months have absolutely changed my life. And interacting with them on a daily basis and getting to know everybody on the team and everything, I can't tell you how much excitement it has been. I would like to state for the record, okay, that those people, that those of you that are listening, these are real people. They are on a spaceship and they are here. They are not Gosia. They are not Robert, okay? And they, each and every one of them has their own wonderful and unique personalities, I have come to love them all very, very much, as well as Gosia and Robert and the team. And this has been an opportunity of a lifetime. It is what I've wanted and desired my whole life and what I knew. And so through their efforts and mine, and then... they actually showed the databases and so forth and told how many Palladians have been here on the planet before how many women. And according to the records and the database, there has only been 500 Palladian men ever been on Earth at any time. And there's only been up to 2,000 of the female.
Just a quick clarification. When you talk about Pleiadians, you are referring to Tegetan Pleiadians, because within Pleiades, yes. There are so many races. And we are just talking about Taygeta and Taygetan, Taygetan Pleiadian, men and women incarnating, whether through the immersion program or as star seeds just been born here recently.
Precisely. And I'd like to iterate also that we are from the planet Era. Taygeta is the name of our star or sun. Okay, so there is that distinction, and there are several different Pleiadian races, species, but we're all interconnected. Yeah. So that being said, they looking at that database with, say, the 500 men, some have been lost, some have died, some were murdered, and some have never woken up. But out of the 500, the number that I'm showing on the database was number 214. And for me, that was particularly exciting because, as all of you out there know, that most of us associate our life or our daily things with a number or numbers that are our lucky numbers or that type of a thing. My number has always been 14, and the other number has always been 7. So if you take the 214, there's my 14. If you add the numbers up, there's my 7. So that was particularly cool. Yeah, very much so. And then, of course, there was much, much more to be learned from the database and things at that time. So it is just, it's beyond words. It really is.
So we will go into that about what you learned and what you have been talking about with Varu, because I know that communication continues for you. But first, let me just, how did you feel when you felt your identity, your Taygetan identity confirmed? Because it was something you felt all your life. But it was confirmed, especially the number was given to you, the number of a Taygetan man coming in, you know, to Earth. How did that feel, the confirmation?
Oh, God, there are no words for that whatsoever. I mean, it's the most fantastic thing to know for certain. You know, it's one thing to know within yourself something that has happened or exists all your life, but to actually have someone confirm it for you or others confirm it for you it's beyond words. It brings me to tears every time. So I can't express how it feels, but it's a lifelong dream come true. And so I understand why I'm here more and the service and so forth. It's great. And I can't thank you enough for facilitating some of that as well and making that happen. But just the thoughts of having the council convene over me is enough to blow me in the next year. So, yeah, and I realize that there are those out there that are also starseeds and feel that they too are part of this, and that may even be a better fit than myself. But to be confirmed as one of the Vanguard members, one of the early teams, that has been a life-altering change. And I thank the team. I thank Swaru. I thank Annika and Brother Kellel. Believe me, it's beyond all words.
Let me just maybe go backwards a little bit and explain how this happened. Because just so you know, guys, I don't connect people actually with them. This is not my purpose to be. And me and Robert, we have been receiving so many requests. Please, I want to talk to Zvaru too, and me, and everybody. Of course, I understand that, but it's not. We're not in the position, and of course, and also they actually, to be honest, don't have time to be interacting with the humans anymore. They actually have completed their massive contact phase, which will be explained in the next video. And why did I connect Dale? I do believe there is some kind of a, you know, otherworldly connection here, because I don't even read emails, and I read your emails just before the interview, when you were asking about, you know, the interaction with me. I did the interview. I felt something is different here. And then after the interview, what happened was that they watched it. They watched the interview, and I talked to them about Dale and about him suspecting, knowing that he is Taygetan. And as you may not know, one of their mission of those races, in this case Taygetan Pleiadian race, is to take care of their star seeds, is to bring them back home. So of course they were very interested in his story, and they were interested to confirm if probably he is or he isn't. And they, you know, with their technology and their ways and interacting with Dale, they have confirmed that. And yes, you are right. They were debating whether to interact, to whether to communicate with you or not, because as I said, they don't really have much time anymore. They are very busy, and they organize the whole council. The councils are organized when they have something to discuss, and they meet in a group and they debate the issue at hand. So the issue of Dale was debated, and they have come to the conclusion, and we have participated with Robert in that council, that that it's okay to bring him in and to communicate, and that's how it started.
The fact that I guess I had gotten a little disheartened with a little bit of information, and the fact that I felt that they were going to pick up and leave, and so I actually climbed inside myself for a while. For a few weeks, I didn't want to talk to anyone, didn't want to go out. I was kind of depressed, the whole thing. And I couldn't really figure out exactly who I was, you know. And I'd still been seeing the ships coming to the house and things like that. But so just before any of this was done, you had contacted me and said that you had some exciting news and that the council had been convened over me. And they had decided that they wanted to talk to me. But before that actually happened, I went on your website at your urgence to the Lameda site. It's the, what is it called?
The call from the planet Earth, where people are expressing their help, their calls for assistance, for the ET assistance.
Right. I went on that site. At your urgence, I made a 5-minute video.
Sure.
And I was very firm. I was very frank. And I told my family in no uncertain terms what I thought of their interactions and also what I thought of the damn Prime Directive. And I say that because sometimes the Prime Directive is so unbelievably frustrating for them and for us. And so I made this video, and it was just about 2 days after I made that video and it was launched that I got the news from you.
Yes.
That they had seen it, that they were very moved, and they decided, yeah, that's one of our own. We better bring them into this thing. And so that's when I got to meet them on the 26th, and like I said, that was life-altering. So sometimes dreams do come true.
They do.
Yeah,
and you better be careful with what you're fantasize about and what your dreams really are, because they might come true and then you have to confront with that reality. Now let me just ask you, so let's go into actually what it is that you are talking about with Baruch and what you are learning. I would like to ask you, what is it that you learned so far from Svaru that has impacted you the most?
Oh, you would bring that up. Okay. We talk of all manner of things, of course, and basically any and all questions, anything you can imagine, we discuss. But very little actually affects me or bothers me. They're so very respectful and concerned that any information that they give to us might impact our lives, and or possibly cause us to change our beliefs or things like that. And so that is walking the tightrope or walking the double-edged sword of the Prime Directive. So, as I said, very little bothers me. Some of it is very confirming and releasing. But probably the one that bothered me, as I say, bothered me in any way, was the one regarding the Apollo moon missions and our launch in 69,
yes.
Apollo 11, and so forth.
Let's talk about
for
this.
For those of you that have not heard me before, I am an ex-engineer, a scientist engineer, rocket scientist, if you will, working for NASA for 12 years. And I worked on the space shuttle. I worked on the Atlas Centaur, I worked on the Atlas Agena, and I worked on instrumentation. So I've been around that quite a while and always wanted to work for NASA. I even wanted to be an astronaut.
Yes.
But there were restrictions on size and glasses and different things that prevented it. So I got to serve on the ground. And but all of us here, most people believe that we went to the moon. and that we accomplished many of the things that we did, including me. The issue is that when we began to discuss in deep detail the moon landings, especially beginning in 69, that they really didn't happen, that these are basically fake and have been used in propaganda, and that most of the people involved, and that would be all of the launch controllers at Houston, all of the launch controllers at Kennedy, all of the various setups from NASA, whether it's Ames or Glenn or wherever, or Kennedy, these people all believed, as I did, that we actually went to the moon. According to Swaru, whom I call Little Sister, and the reason for that is even though she's a powerhouse, she's about 5 feet tall. And so me being the bigger guy, I call her Little Sister. But anyway, Little Sister has told me that according to their scans, according to their efforts, they have not been able to find the retro reflectors on the moon. They have not been able to find any of the remains of the LEM or the landing sites. And according to their research and the things that they know and see, that the Saturn rocket, the LEM, and the various things, they just were not capable technically of taking us to the moon. And so I had to do a lot of research on that, and we had a lot of discussions back and forth. But when you look at it, that say maybe 3 points that I can leave that are main points, is that the Saturn rocket itself, even though it was a big firecracker, made a lot of noise, a lot of thunder, and was awesome to see, and I was even there for the launch of Apollo 13, that it just did not have the power or the capabilities to launch us into anything other than a low Earth orbit of 90 to 120 miles. The LEM itself was very unstable and was extremely difficult to fly. Armstrong actually crashed the thing, almost died twice in flying it on Earth or a simulator, and that the instability of the craft would have required between 100 and 1,000 adjustments per second. And with the computer of the time, that just wasn't something that was possible. That computer was little more than an adding machine. And in fact, it only had a 1 megahertz processor. It had a 16-bit capability, 4 kbytes of RAM, and only 32 kbytes of ROM. So it just couldn't have produced the kind of calculations and control necessary to fly the LEM or to land it. One of the other problems, and there were 4 computers on board the craft, but there were not enough capabilities. Our cell phone far exceeds what that computer could have done. The other thing that they had to deal with was, of course, the Van Allen belts and the radiation from those. And according to Little Sister, the radiation there is approximately the density that would be found in a 1,000-watt microwave oven. And they would have to travel through that belt not only for hours, but even up to days. And their explanation from NASA that they went up and around that is just not plausible. They basically would have been fried in about 10 minutes, mm-hmm. both the astronauts and the electronics. So a lot of these things just don't add up. And yes, it affected me. It wasn't negatively, but it affected me from the standpoint that I had really truly hoped that humanity was a little more advanced than we had appeared to be. And that's the reason I felt bad about it. But other than that, as a scientist and engineer and otherwise, I could see where all of those things would be an issue. And so we remained open about that somewhat in our talks, but I have considerable doubt now that we ever went at all. Now, that's not to say that we don't have the technology today, nor is it to say that the secret space program that had existed for well over 75 years, they had capability as well. But their purpose was keep the right hand looking while the left hand was doing something else. So that was the one that got me the most. And we have talked about some beauties, let me tell you.
Yes, I remember you were sharing your concerns about that. It affected you personally, yes, because, you know, you were attached to the story, and not just to the story just because of the story, but because you wanted to have this faith in humanity, you know, you want to believe in the humanity's capacity to achieve something, you know, like going to the moon at least, and you were very disappointed because of that, with the human level of understanding things, you know, so... But I remember you had the presentation because you actually organized up to now two presentations about this communication, from what I understand, with Varu. Oh, yeah. And you presented some of this moon info to your friends, to the scientists, and you have met with some opposition. You know, what was like the biggest argument against the information that we did not go to the Varu? To the moon from Svaru. What did they oppose? What was the most difficult argument from them?
I wouldn't say that there were any that were the most difficult. They were all kind of equally difficult. And again, it was those three major points that I brought out. Now, you know, and because we use in government, because we use in religion, politics, et cetera, we use compartmentalization. And by using compartmentalization, they find it very easy to maintain secrets, you know, between groups. So, as I said, even the controllers, even the launch people, everyone, we all thought that it was real. I was there. I saw it. You know, but it was very well thought out. All of the little points were very well addressed. And so the little points tend to overshadow the bigger points that we didn't take, you know, we took them for granted. And so when you put these bigger points out there under the microscope and start picking them apart, they become a little more evident. And there is a lot of room for discussion. And so can I say 100% no, that they didn't happen? But I tend to believe what my little sister and the rest of the team has told me. They're in a ship. They're in orbit. They've been there. They can tell us what we're seeing and what we are not. And now I'm going to shock you even a little bit more because I want people to understand that the moon is not the moon. The moon is a space station. It is a biosphere that was a space station and so forth and was capable of flight. It was built by a consortium with the Andromedans, and I believe she said the Umite. Don't hold me to that one. But it was built between them, and it was badly, badly damaged in the war at Tiamat.
Yes.
And so the moon had been moved into the Earth orbit, and it's basically a duck blind. And so things go on there. And what we see as the surface of the moon is actually a holographic projection. So there are projectors that are above the surface that project a surface of the moon back to us. And this is a 3D projection, and D is not dimension. It is density, referring to frequency. Everything, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is frequency. It is not dimensions and so forth. It's not as you've been taught. It is a density, and the best way to explain densities to you is to say, for example, look at water. As I said, I'd like to explain that when I explain density, the best way to get you to understand that is using water, for example. Water here in the third density, we can think of it as a frozen solid, as hard as it can be. And then moving to the next phase would be liquid water. And then the next phase from there is steam. Now, all three phases of water are still water, but the only difference is that the frequency has increased between each level. All right, so that is what is going on when we say 3D, 4D, 5D, etc. So the Earth is a primordial 5D hologram, and the moon is being used to project back the 3D holographic matrix on top of that. So we are a hologram within a hologram here. And that is... how you can understand density levels. All right, our brothers and sisters are in the high 5D, and they have dropped down basically from the 7D, as I understand it, to interact with us here.
Just to interject that, no, I from what I understand is they are operating on the 5D, on a 5D level, on a higher 5D. It's Varu herself who has explained to us that she is a star 7D starseed incarnated in a Taygetan 5D body. But as a society, they function on a 5D up to higher 5D level.
And she did that on purpose so that she could interact with us at this point in time.
Yes.
So, you know, I find that a lot of folks, I do many interviews, I do lectures, et cetera, on television, radio, everything. But one of the things that people do not seem to understand is when they talk about 3, 4, 5D, that kind of thing, and people think of it as dimension. It is not dimension. Yeah. It is frequency. So as long as we can get that cleared up. But that's one of the things that they have a hard time to understand. So as I said, the difficulty in answering their questions, it wasn't so bad once we had established a baseline and how to look at those issues. And the three main ones that I related today were the most difficult for them. But in no case did I have anyone that was extremely negative or highly confrontational regarding this. Most people were able to accept this with sufficient understanding. So I was quite happy with that. And these were capacity rooms and lectures over the last 2 months. So people have been able to accept Swaru's and Annika's information with ease, and I was very happy for that.
Yeah. Just going back to the moon story for a second, you said you saw it launch. So if it never happened and you saw a launch, so where did it launch to, and was it empty inside? Basically, there was no one there. What happened? Because you are like an expert on the subject now.
Yeah. When I was younger, my father worked for Terex General Motors. He was a top engineer. Worked for the one of the senior engineering teams that designed and built the tractor crawler that carried the moon rocket, the Apollo rockets, from the assembly building to the launch pad. And as a result of that, he had top secret clearance, and we were invited to the launch of Apollo 13. So as a child, I went there. I even had pictures of myself with my hand on the side of the rocket the morning that the thing launched, and I have exhaust, the oxygen exhaust steaming over the top of my head in the pictures. Anyway, I tell people I'm the one that jinxed it. That's why it blew up. But no, I did get to see that. My aunt and uncle lived across the bay in Titusville, and I was able to see it there. And then I was also sent, I worked from NASA, to the launch site because I worked on several things for the space shuttle itself. So I was in Cocoa Beach and stayed there quite often. Anyway, it was a phenomenal sight. As I said, it's a lot of thunder, it's a lot of noise, it's a lot of smoke. You know, it's very, very impressive. It's a big firecracker. But again, it was all designed to keep us looking one place while they were doing something somewhere else. So, you know, it's a shame, but, you know, I've come to believe that that was the case.
But so what does Varu say about this? There was no astronauts inside, right?
No,
there was no one there.
No.
So where did it
no
go to
inside.
Exactly? It just reached the Van Allen belts and just exploded there? Or did they bring it back into some other location secretly?
No.
What happened?
She told me also that to keep the weight and the weight and thrust ratios correct, that the LEM itself was on board, was loaded in, but it had no fuel supplies or anything loaded. So that reduced the weight by several hundred thousand pounds, and the rocket was able to achieve a low Earth orbit. But the point of it was that once it was up there, then the whole thing was jettisoned or sent into the sun or destroyed or something of that nature, but it did not come back.
Uh-huh.
and it definitely didn't go to the moon. Mm-hmm. So there was no one on board to even worry about doing that. So, like I said, that was a real shock to me at first, but after I started looking at all the details, it made a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so apart from the moon story, was there anything else that surprised you and shocked you, or some kind of information that you struggled with to understand or to accept?
I, in all honesty and humility, I would like to say no, not really. In fact, if anything, my family seemed to be kind of shocked at what information I had retained, especially regarding our technologies and our craft and all that stuff, which I've known my whole life. But so it all fell into place for me. Everything fit. Mm-hmm. And we were able to have, I am able to have pretty technical discussions with the team regarding those things. And for me, that's been particularly rewarding and exciting. So, you know, it just also reminds me once again how far behind, unfortunately, we are here.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would have to say that was you know, that was the greatest part of all, to be able to contact and connect on that level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have shared some pretty exciting information with us, too. And as your videos bring to the people, these are just some of the things that we get to talk about. Gosha would be making videos 24/7 with nonstop, no sleep, no eat, and she still couldn't get out all the information. Yeah. There's just no thing. But it's unbelievable.
It's
now, they have even allowed, I assume yourself as well as myself, to ask friends and people that we know if they have questions. And they have been very, very forthcoming in answering those questions and helping people with things. That's not to say that they're not going to give you the information who's going to win the lottery and if your boyfriend's going to break up with you or that kind of thing.
No, not this kind of information.
No, questions of relevance and things like that, they do answer gladly. And so they've been very forthcoming in everything. And sometimes these are not the things we want to hear. You know, they're gonna hit us right between the eyes. And they have given us many different things like that, especially information on the Titanic one time when we were talking.
I was just gonna say that. Actually, I went into one of the chats with Dale because sometimes I get invited, but sometimes I prefer not to interfere too much because, you know, it's a special time individually that Dale has with them, and it's different if it's in a group setting, no? So, but one time I entered and we started to talk about, well, you were talking about Titanic. And, oh my God, the amount of details that she has about this story and about what really has happened. I have to share this video and 1.2. I have it saved, but I haven't even got to that. But I will, yeah. I will. But, oh, what a story, no, about the Titanic.
Oh, it is not what people think it is. And the fact that the Titanic and the Lusitania are tied together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I won't spoil it by telling that part of it, but when you do make a video on that, I think people are going to be amazed. Yeah. And once again, all I can say is follow the money. It is always, that's the truth that I'm telling, follow the money. I'd like to tell people that they are like us. They're like human beings, and they have the same issues and problems we have, just on a higher level. You know, they need to understand that.
I think it's very, very important for people to finally wake up and stop just looking at the lights in the sky, but get interested, like really interested in the crews and what they have to say, because they have been here and they've been trying to say hello for so many years. But what we have come across are the reactions in the Spanish world as well. That it has been welcomed. Of course, there are a lot of supporters, but there are also many so-called UFO investigators and channels who have been investigating UFOs and the whole phenomenon for so many years. But as Varu said a few days ago, as soon as they hear that actually there is a crew inside and they have something to say, they panic and they start to attack and they start to, you know, defame the whole thing, like it's not real. So we are stuck on that level of looking at the UFOs, and as soon as someone comes out and shares, actually, you know, it's for me, it's so frustrating and so logical. If there has, if the UFO phenomenon is real and the UFOs are there and they can be seen from so close and have been, it has been filmed and it has been recorded and it's documented, it's obvious that those ships are not flying there by themselves. Some of them are, but that's another story. Yeah? There is a crew inside. There are actually people behind the wheel, so to speak, and they are here to transmit something, not just to be seen. And they would like to get involved with the humans, but we are so stuck on that level. We are so afraid to actually accept that they have been wanting to speak to us. You know, there are people there in those ships. And like you said, many of them are just people, even though they are advanced and they are who they are with such advanced knowledge, but they are people. Like you said, with emotions, with their issues, sad, happy. You know, every day Svaru sometimes has a different mood. Sometimes she's happier, sometimes she's sadder. It's normal.
Exactly. and they are so very overworked. You know, the amount of work that they have to deal with. They're in contact with less than 8 people on the planet. But there are so many things that they're watching over and being involved in everything in. It's amazing. And they are so understaffed. And at this point, they are the only Pleiadian craft in the quadrant. The rest of them have been called home or on other deep space assignments, and so essentially our brothers and sisters in this ship are serving alone. And so this is a great deal of effort on their part. Now I know and I can hear everyone out there saying, why don't they just make contact? Why don't they just show themselves? When are they going to do this? When are they going to do that? But I would like to make something perfectly clear. As a scientist, as an engineer, I have studied every aspect of UFOs my whole life. I have been involved in the UFO community most of my life. I've seen craft since I was a little child. And I've become rather dismayed, unhappy with, if you will, the UFO community at large. Because as I see it right now, they are too busy worrying about who's written the latest book, who has the greatest posting, who's got the best position in the lecture, who's making the most money. This is an aspect of the UFO system that has become, making a living. It is not about following the UFO enigma or trying to find out who and what they are. It's more about proliferating their lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of infighting going on in this situation right now. This is precisely why I do not have a book. I do not have a website. I am not making any money on this, nor are you, for that matter. Okay? If you make enough to make your rent, I would be surprised.
Barely, yes.
The point of it is that I don't think they want the truth. If they got the truth, if our people landed on the front lawn and said, here we are, they would no longer know what to do with themselves. There wouldn't be any purpose for the UFO community at large.
Yes.
Okay? So the prime directive itself is designed to protect them and us. And it's set up so that we have a modicum of disbelief maintained.
Yes.
They do not impose their will on us in any way. Ever. And, you know, because of that, people are disappointed that they won't step in. They can't step in and straighten out our mess. They can help us. They can whisper in our ear. They can guide us if we ask. But until enough of us wake up and realize that we are in a mess of our own making, that we are in a position where we need help, if we would all stand up and say, okay, we really need your help, they could come in and do that. But we haven't given them the opportunity yet. And it is absolutely imperative that our viewers, that your friends, my friends, everyone understand this. This is why they're here. But, you know, in a sense, I can see that they have become tired. They have tried and tried and tried. It's like SETI, for example. The reason SETI can't find our brothers and sisters is because they're right under their nose. All right? They do not use radio waves. They do not use frequencies of water and all these silly things that they're looking for. They use muon beams and different technologies and pulse beams, and they're at an orbit 300 miles above the Earth, for crying out loud. Okay? It's time that we started looking at the stuff under our noses.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we are. This is what we need. Now, we've got more than 56 to 60% of the people on this planet that are aware. It's time we all stood up together and asked for help. But it won't happen before then. It can't. Because they will not violate the prime directive, even to the point of death. Our entire crew is sworn to die first. And so this is where it's at, ladies and gentlemen. We have to wake up. We have to look and see. Those of us are looking to see. I just had a friend send me an email this morning after I gave them instruction on either looking for ships or asking for contact. And they got it. This is easy to do. It's simply a matter of asking. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm on a pulpit. I'm
yes.
not a preacher.
Good, good.
But it is the truth. And I am thrilled to death to be able to come here today and tell you these things and to share it with our viewers and listeners. And I only do it because I do it in the name of service. I don't get anything else out of it other than that. And that's enough for me. If we can help one person, done a lot.
It is so important what you said. Thank you so much, Dale. And I'll be more than happy to meet with you again. And as you keep learning from them and interacting, you are always welcome to come and share. And share. So we'll do this more often. The next video after this, I actually will make the video about, it's going to be called The Contact, and their conclusions about this whole topic of the direct contact with the humanity and whether we are ready or not. And why, and you'll be able to understand much more in this whole subject, which is not as black and white as you think, and it's much more involved here, metaphysically, transcendentally, physically, on all levels. Thank you, Dale. I want to say thank you so much. Any final words today?
Just like I said, to everybody else, the information that you offer, that they offer, that I offer. We're not here to make Pleiadian converts. We're not here to start a religion. We're not here to change the world by any means. We're simply providing information and planting it as seeds. And I tell people, if it resonates with you, well, that's wonderful. If it does not, set it aside till maybe someday that it does. But never dismiss anything just out of hand. Okay, things are not always what they appear, and more often than not, they are more than what they appear. So,
that is true.
Dreams do come true.
Yes,
and those of you out there that are wishing that it was you instead of me, I can understand that, and I respect that. But both Gosha and I, I'm sure, we thank you very much for listening.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Dale. And we will be continuing. I'll see you in the next video, in the next, and the next, and the next.
Oh, one last thing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Swaru, Annika,
yes.
Laura, and the entire team.
Of course.
I love you all.
Yes, we love you all. Thank you so much for keeping up, for putting up with us, for your patience.
Yes.
A lot of endurance and patience and enthusiasm. And for your support and friendship, and for believing in this, in believing in humanity still, despite all the obstacles and all the matrix and all the hardships. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night, because this is nighttime here, and I'll see you in the next video. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.